translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O Maharaj Pariksit, subduer of all enemies, after Lord Brahma finished speaking to the demigods, he took them with him to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond this material world. The Lord's abode is on an island called Swetadweep, which is situated in the ocean of milk. Purport. Maharaj Pariksit is addressed here as Arindama, subduer of all kinds of enemies. Not only do we have enemies outside of our body, but within our bodies there are also many enemies, such as lusty desires, anger, and greed. Maharaj Pariksit was specifically addressed as Arindama because in his political life he was able to subdue all kinds of enemies. And even though he was a young king, as soon as he heard that he was going to die within 7 days, he immediately left his kingdom. He did not follow the dictates of enemies within his body, such as lust, greed, and anger. He was not at all angry with the Muni's son, who had cursed him. Rather, he accepted the curse and prepared for his death in the association of Sukadeva Goswami. Death is inevitable. No one can surpass the force of death. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit, while fully alive, wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He is consequently addressed here as Arindama. Another word, Surya Priya, is also significant. Although Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is equal towards everyone, he is especially inclined towards his devotees. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. The devotees are all demigods. There are two kinds of men within this world. One is called Deva and the other is called Asura. The Padma Purana states, Dai Bhuta Sago Loke Smin Daiva Asura Eva Cha Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asuras Tadviparya Yaha. Anyone who is a devotee of Lord Krishna is called a Deva. Is there any demigods here? I guess everybody is, according to this. Anyway, nice to meet you. Always wanted to meet the Devas. And others, there are others also. And even though there are many, there may be devotees of demigods, they are also called Asura. Ravana, for example, was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but he is described as an Asura. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu is described as a great devotee of Lord Brahma, yet he was also an Asura. Therefore, only the devotee of Lord Vishnu is called Sura, not Asura. Lord Krishna is very much pleased with his devotees, even if they are not on the topmost stage of devotional service. Even on the lower stages of devotional service, one is transcendental, and if one continues with devotional life, he continues to be a Deva or Sura. If one continues in this way, Krishna will always be pleased with him and will give him all instructions so that he may very easily return home back to Godhead. Concerning Ajitasya Padam, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the milk ocean of this material world, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Padam Shiro Daihi Sta Swetadvipam Tamasa Prakrite Param. The island known as Swetadvip, which is in the ocean of milk, is transcendental. It has nothing to do with this material world. A city government may have a rest house with a governor and important government officers stay. Such a rest house is not an ordinary house. Similarly, although Swetadvip, which is in the ocean of milk, is in this material world, it is called Param Padam, transcendental. Om Agyan Timurandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stavditam Enabhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhutananda Siya Dvaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. Maharaj Parikshit is addressed here as Ariddhama, Siddur of all enemies. Prabhupada begins the purport by glorifying this very great king, Maharaj Parikshit, who was cursed to die in 7 days. And Prabhupada mentions here, although he was a young king, had everything one may look towards in terms of material opulences and material position. He was young, powerful, unrivaled, many subjects, many followers from outside of his kingdom. He was respected as the king of the world. But, and he was unfairly cursed too. It's interesting. It's not like the curse was actually a fair curse in that sense. In the sense that the slight offense he made was not warranted the curse of death. He was simply, he took a snake, dead snake, that was laying on the ground, and he came to the hermitages of Shamagrish, and he was thirsty. He had been traveling for a long time, was feeling the need for water. The sage was in meditation, deep meditation, and didn't recognize the very important guest, the king of the world, had come to his hermitage. And so he continued with his meditation, not aware of the king's presence. And the king was somewhat insulted. Didn't say anything, but he took a stick, and with the stick he picked up a dead snake that was laying by, and he put it over the sage. He said, "You are such a great sage, here's your garland." Kind of an insult. But he was cursed to die because of that. Doesn't sound fair at all. It isn't. And the Shastras also say that. It was not a curse that was supposed to be given to such a powerful, important personality as the king under the circumstances. But the king had the sage had a son. His boy was 12 years old. His name was Sringi. Because he was born in a Brahmin family, and because he had power, and because he was, what we say, unaware of the king's position, he had cursed him to die. It's a very powerful curse. When Maharaj Parikshit heard the curse, it explains that he could have counteracted the curse. He had that power, but he didn't. He accepted it as the will of the Lord. And he simply gave up all the position, all the prestige, even his family. He had a family also. He was married. And he simply took the opportunity to sit down on the banks of the Jamuna. Sometimes we say Ganga, but it was actually the Jamuna River running through Delhi. It's mentioned in other places. And just wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the lips of this pure devotee, Sukadeva Goswami. So he subdued his enemies. What was the enemy? Anger, lust, greed. He could have counteracted and said, you know, I'm a king. He could have got angry at the little boy. The boy was 12 years old. But he didn't. It says that he subdued these lower modes and simply accepted it as the will of the Lord. So Prabhupada wants to make the point that there are enemies inside and there's enemies outside. This is the point that's being made here throughout the verse. He focuses on both. Here, the story theme is that there's enemies outside, and that is the demons have become powerful, and so the devas are looking for a relief from the demons' control, so they're going to Brahma. He's going to go to the milk ocean to speak to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shirodakshai Vishnu, Svetadvipa, who has a abode in the material world, which is called Svetadvipa. It's an ocean of milk. It's an island. It's also called Dhruvaloka, the pole star. So on that pole star, there's an island called Svetadvipa. So, that's the external enemies. And they're around also. In this age, there's a lot of that, right? We talked about that in a few verses back, how the demons are, what we say, very influential. But the real enemies, or the more dangerous enemies, are not the external enemies. The real enemies are the internal enemies. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, envy. These are called, they're called enemies. They're actually described in that way by the Shastras as enemies. They're personifications of material, sinful life. And the attack, inside, outside, but mostly inside. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in lust, in anger, lust is there. In greed, lust and anger is there. In illusion, lust, anger, and greed is there. In pride, lust, anger, greed, and illusion is there. And in envy, you get the whole package. Because why we come to the material world is the reason, that is the what we call the adi aparad, or the adi sin, we might say. The original sin is enviousness of Krishna, which manifests itself in this world as envious towards each other. So these are enemies, or powerful enemies. And one can subdue external enemies, but one cannot, just like Prabhupada said, what was his name? Alexander the Great. Powerful king. He was somewhat righteous in his own way, too. He had a sense of righteousness. And he had conquered practically many, many kingdoms around him. But he was conquered by his own lusty desires. Is it, what is it, who was that? Cleopatra? What was her husband's? Julius Caesar. Another powerful king was destroyed by the beauty of the opposite sex. So external power is not so great. It's lauded, it's glorified, it's seen as something wonderful, especially in Kali Yuga, if one can defeat their so-called enemies. We call it so-called because one designates enemies and friends according to their, what we say, interest in life. If someone fulfills my interests or helps me to fulfill my interests, or is not interfering with my interests, then that person's a friend. And if someone is doing the contrary, that's considered an enemy. So these what we say, lower modes, which are called enemies, or activities of the mind and the senses, are the real enemies. And to subdue them is not easy. It's a constant battle. And Krishna explains, or actually, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, but Arjuna really makes the point really strong that, you know, a person has a lot of intelligence and they know what's right and they know what's wrong, but still they do the wrong thing. Sounds familiar? Oh boy, I know I'm full, and if I eat any more, I'm going to fall asleep right after I eat, and I won't be able to do my service. But it's really good prasad. So I'll take another plate. That's not so bad. I know I shouldn't say something to this person, but I can't help it. I'm going to say it anyway. So we get, these are called pushings. So Arjuna says, a person knows what's right and wrong, but still, they do the wrong thing. We have the example of Dhritarashtra. He knew his son, especially Duryodhana, and all his other sons, were lusty, greedy, avaricious, and they were wrong, trying to usurp the kingdom from the Pandavas. But still, he sided with his sons. And when he was given information contrary to that, he said, I know what you're saying is right, but I can't do it. I'm too attached. I'm too attached. He knew. So Arjuna makes that point. What causes a person to act sinfully, even if they know it's not right? And Krishna gives the next verse. Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava mahashap no mahapapam vidyeha vihavarinam. He says it is lust, and lust only, which comes in contact with the material mode of passion. And that mode is very strong. It's a strong of pushing persons to think, act, and speak very strongly. Mode of ignorance doesn't push you to activities too much. It just relegates you to ignorance and laziness. And of course, activities are there, but passion is very, very strong. Prabhupada explains that there's two kinds of fools, an active fool and a passive fool. And the worst one is the active fool, because not only does he make himself a mess, but everybody else too. Right? So the mode of passion is very dangerous. And it causes, what we say, problems throughout the whole world. That's why Krishna says, this mode, coming in contact with anger, destroys the whole world. It's powerful. And it's lust. What is that lust? The desire to satisfy one's senses without any consideration of the consequences. Like that. I mean, sometimes devotees fall into a little bit of that. Okay, you know, I know it's not going to be good, but got to do it anyway. We don't really rationalize so much like that, but we know. But still, we're forced to act. That's called weakness of heart. Therefore, one has to subdue these lower, what we say, modes, or these enemies by higher intelligence, and fix the mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. That's the only way. And Krishna explains that this lust sits in the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. And these three areas are always pushing for satisfaction. The mind, the intelligence, and the senses. And especially the mind is always looking to use the senses to satisfy itself and all the different senses like that. The intelligence more or less gets pulled around by the activities of the uncontrolled mind. But Krishna goes on to explain that you can subdue, he calls this enemy lust, as he calls it an enemy, he calls it the slayer of self-realization and knowledge. It destroys knowledge, it destroys the process of self. And he explains how to control it, he says, by regulating the senses. And engaging in devotional service, one can always subdue this very formidable enemy. And then he goes on to explain the degrees of this enemy. It's like a womb, the embryo covering the womb, the smoke covering fire, and dust covering the mirror, like that. I actually said it in the wrong area. So it's the embryo covering the womb is like the mode of ignorance, or the thickest form. The dust over the mirror, and then smoke over the fire, like that. So what is lust? It's simply love of God. Not transferred, but misdirected towards the objects of material senses. That's all it is. One cannot eliminate that energy of lust, one has to direct it towards Krishna. By engaging in devotional service, that's the process. To take that same energy and use it for Krishna's service. Then it becomes purified and becomes what we say transcendental, and it becomes an opportunity to connect with Krishna. So that same energy, when purified or when engaged in devotional service, becomes what we say transcendental, or the source of one's success, like that. So these enemies are constantly struggling. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these enemies produce six, what he calls them waves. That's the word he uses, waves. I'm not sure exactly how that word applies, But there's six waves, or we might say energies, that push. And that is lust, not lust, but hunger and thirst, lamentation and illusion, disease and death. These are the six, what we call, forces that are produced by these six enemies. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in explaining this, gives the antidote for the whole thing. He says, you want to get rid of these enemies fast and the results of the enemy, the waves, take to chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra Kirtan. He says Kirtan. Kirtan transforms these desires into transcendental ecstasies. Like that. So Harinam Sankirtan, he uses the word crushes these enemies. We hear the story of Prahlad, not Prahlad Maharaj, but Jai and Vijay, two gatekeepers. They fell from the spiritual world into the material world, and they were forced to take three births as demons. And each took three births, Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna, Tantravarga, and the other one was Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Shishupal. Now it's interesting, and it's also analogous, that each one of these demons represents one of the six enemies. The first demon was Hiranyaksha. What was his anartha, or his enemy? Who knows? There's lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. Which one? Greed. He was so greedy. He wanted all, what was it, the gold within the world. And so he just kept exploiting and extracting gold as much as he could. So much so that this gold, the taking out of the gold of the earth caused the earth to fall into the Garbhodak Ocean, the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean. And then, of course, the Lord had to incarnate as Varahadev in order to kill the demon of greed and rescue the earth and bring it back into its orbit. That's a beautiful pastime. But here we see that this enemy, greed, is actually personified as a demon. So these are called demons. Prabhupada makes the nice analogy in his purport how demons are really bad qualities. So greed. How do you conquer over greed? Become greedy for Krishna. Become greedy. Yeah, this is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Use that greed instead of for satisfying the senses. Try to become greedy for Krishna. I want more and more service. Well, of course, we can only do so much, but up to... We can only do so much at a certain time, and then we can do more. Makes sense? In other words, whatever you're doing now, you can do, but you can always do more. And then when you get doing more, you can always do more, right? It's like that. Because devotional service is never limited by what we say material definition. Oh, I have so much time and I have so much service. Now, Krishna expands time and also gives us the ability to do more and more service. That's Krishna consciousness. So that is one of the antidotes. There's others to overcome this element of greed. More service. More chanting. More reading. More hearing. More Krishna conscious, like that. And then there's no time for these other things. Ah. Hiranyakashipu, what was his anartha? We got five left. We did greed, we got lust, anger, illusion, pride, and envy. Pride, oh, he was so proud. He was thinking, there's nobody greater than me. I'm immortal. He even these demigods are like little insects compared to me. In fact, he would raise his eyebrows in anger sometimes, and the demigods would shake. They would all think, oh no, he's already destroyed whatever we have. He's going to destroy us now. They would really get... The demigods were actually fearful of Ranikashipu. He was so powerful, but he was proud of his power. He was so arrogant. Even when his little son told him, there's actually somebody more powerful than you. He didn't even believe it. He didn't believe it. Until he met him face to face. That was the Sringadev. Destroyed his pride in a second. So he was so proud. So pride, what is the nature of pride? Pride comes by way of having things or being able to do things or being recognized by others as important or great. They say if you never did anything great, it's not hard to get, it's easy to stay humble. But when you do something like there's some success and people notice it, Chai Prabhu, Hari Bo, you're right on. And, there's a chance to get proud. And then you're in danger. So sometimes we say that when you notice, as soon as you get some praise, you're in a dangerous position. As soon as it happens, just realize that. Because at the next moment, you're starting to think, Jai Prabhupada. It's not real. The jai is not all the way there. It's just like part of the way there. So it's easy to become proud. People can become pride because they're good looking. People can become pride because they're wealthy. People become proud because they have abilities. People become proud because they're born in a good situation. People become proud because of having material possessions. So many ways to become proud. What's the worst form of pride? Or the most difficult form of pride to get over? Who knows, huh? Huh? Knowledge? No? Who said wealth? Wealth, that's the biggest one. That's illustrated in the 10th canto with the story of Narada Muni cursing Nalakuvera Manigriva. They had so much wealth, they were so proud that even when Narada came, they didn't even recognize Narada. And Prabhupada writes that, or at least the Acharyas write that actually the pride of wealth is the most difficult pride to get over. Because when you have wealth, you think, I can do anything, I can go anywhere, I can even buy people if I want to. Right? And you have so many friends when you're wealthy, right? Who's your real friend? You don't know. So wealth is, it's not like you shouldn't be wealthy, but you shouldn't be proud, that's the point. Because everything comes from Krishna, therefore even the wealth we have is the mercy of God coming. So this pride, and Hiranyakashipu was so proud. Oh, he didn't want to hear advice from anybody. And so that's that pride or arrogance. It's translated in Sanskrit as madda, M-A-D-A. Madda, you know what madda means in the actual translation of the word? Intoxication, insanity, madness. So pride is a form of madness. Okay, so we have Ravana. What was his lust? He had so many opportunities to fulfill his lusty desires. Jai Sisi Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitai Ki Jai. He had so much opportunities to fulfill his lusty desires, but he was never satisfied. He had one of the most chaste and faithful and qualified women in the universe as his wife, Mandodari. She was so qualified that she's glorified in the Shastras on the same level as Sita and Anasuya and other great ladies also, as being a chaste lady. He had so many opportunities to fulfill his lusty desires, but he was never satisfied. And Prabhupada explains that lust, the fulfillment of lust, is like putting fuel on a fire. Sometimes we put wood on a burning fire, and when you put a piece of wood on it, the fire goes down. Right? But if you leave the wood on there for a little while, it starts to burn brighter and stronger. So the initial fulfillment of lust makes it seem to disappear, but actually give it a little time and then it raises its ugly head again in a very, even more powerful way. So one cannot fulfill satisfy lust by fulfilling it. One has to counteract it with devotional activity or neglect the desire, and then ultimately it will go away in due course of time. So lust, he was so lusty, Ravana. But, he was given good advice by his brother and by others. You got so many women, why are you chasing after another man's wife? And especially this Ram, he's such a powerful living entity. Just give her back and you can live happily. You can have enjoy your kingdom. He couldn't hear it. That's why you say lust destroys knowledge. So all the good advice was completely fell on deaf ears. Couldn't hear anything. That's the nature of lust. Kumbhakarna, what was his anartha? Illusion. What did he do all year? He slept. Some people think sleeping, wow, that's the highest form of ecstasy. Let me go to sleep. Oh, it's so nice. They even have I don't know if I should repeat this, but anyway, I will. Just so you know. There's a way to enjoy sleep. You know how they tell you how to enjoy sleep? There's a science of how to enjoy sleep. And that is, you wake up, and then when you go back to sleep, going back to sleep again is the enjoyment of going to sleep, right? So the idea is to wake up so you could go back to sleep. Makes sense? No. But anyway, that's what they say. Anyway, people like to sleep. Prabhupada said sometimes they sleep 36 hours in one day. Although there's only 24, still they try for 36. Sleeping is so nice. When I'm sleeping, I'm in ecstasy. Sometimes they see that. They see a person who is usually a nasty person when he's sleeping. Oh, he looks so nice. Take on a different mood when you're... So sleep, but sleep is a waste of time. So the bodily concept of life is eating and sleeping, mating and defending. So this is the process of illusion, trying to fulfill the needs of the body beyond the necessary requirements. So Kumbhakarna, he was cursed to sleep for 364 days a year, and one day he could get up and eat. That was it. And then he would eat so much and then go back to sleep for the next 364 days. He was really an illusion. So eating and sleeping, bodily concept of life, the illusion, thinking I'm this material body. Well, the last set of Jai and Vijay manifestations were Shishupal and Dantravarga. What was Shishupal? There's only two left. Huh? He was envious. Oh, he was so envious. When he was born with four arms. He was actually a great personality. It's described he was born with four arms. And then his mother took him to an astrologer right after his birth. The astrologer said, When he sees the person who will be the cause of his death, two of his arms will fall off. Well, she got a little concerned. So then after some time, she had the first birthday ceremony for the baby. So she invited all the friends and relatives, and she invited Krishna. And Krishna said, "You don't want me to come." She said, no, I want you to see my baby. He's so nice." When you have a baby, you want to show everybody. Okay. Goo, 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 goo. When the baby comes, everybody's the baby. The supreme personality of attention, right? The baby gets all the attention. That's okay. It's human nature. And then, she was insistent, "Krishna, you've got to come and see my baby." He said, "You're not going to like it if I come." And Shishubha, when he was born, the first words of a baby, they say, "Da-da, ga-ga, ka-ka," so many nice things. He said, "You rascal, Krishna." That was his first words. The first words of the baby. That was his first words. So he appeared, and then Krishna came, and Krishna saw him, and he saw Krishna as a baby, and two of his arms fell off, and his mother saw that. She said, "Krishna, you're going to be the cause of the death of my child?" He said, "I don't want to kill him, but he doesn't like me. He hates me. He can't tolerate my existence. But I'll give him a benediction. He can curse me and blaspheme 100 times. And if he takes a break, then he can start again. And we'll count 100 again. But if he goes over 100 without taking a break, then I have to do something." So it was the Rajasuya sacrifice. And they were determining by election or vote who was going to be the most honorable person to preside over the Rajasuya sacrifice. And unanimously, Krishna was chosen. Shishupa was there. He couldn't tolerate that. He just started to criticize Krishna one thing after another. And the assembly was getting quite disturbed. Krishna was calming everyone down. But he was counting at the same time. 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100, 101. He threw his chakra and gave him a haircut. Right above the shoulders. And he cut off his head right in the middle of the sacrifice. Of course, everybody was quite upset about that. But Krishna did something to prevent the sacrifice from not being, what we say, defiled. So the Sudarshan chakra caught all the blood, and none of the blood hit the floor of the sacrifice. So they could go on with the sacrifice. So Shishupa was killed because of his envy. Now it's the worst of all. When one is envious, they're never happy. "Oh, you got more money than me. You got more praise than me. You got better position than me." Prabhupada says people who kill animals are envious of the animals. If you don't like another person's existence, that's a sign of envy. Because God has given that person their existence and their situation. So to be envious of them means you have an issue with God. So this is the real crux of how to destroy envy. When you're envious of someone else, that means your issue is with the Lord. That means really you don't like what Krishna has given that person. Therefore, you have a problem with Krishna. Think about that one. So, because Krishna is allowing or sanctioning or permitting or even blessing a person with a particular situation, because everything is under his control. So if we don't like something, that means we have a problem with Krishna. Okay. So, and the last one is Dantravarkya, and there's only one left. There is which is anger. Dantavarga was so angry at Krishna because Krishna had killed his friend Shishupal, that he was going to meet Krishna and kill him. And Krishna was on his way to Dwarka because he had to get there fast. He was in a hurry to go to Dwarka. And Dantavarga came and blocked his way and said, "You ain't going anywhere. You're going to contend with me first." He took out his big club, and Dantavarga had a huge club. It's described in the Garga Samhita. His club was like a mountain, huge club. And he started to challenge Krishna. Krishna took out his club, and they started to fight. And then at one point, Dantavarga just swung his club, and Krishna knocked it. And then he took his club and hit Dantavarga in the chest. And he just immediately killed him. He didn't waste time with this demon. This was the fastest recorded killing by Krishna of any demon. Because usually Krishna plays with the demon for a little while and has some fun. Sometimes when it's in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys get excited. It makes a little suspense, a little drama, a little intrigue. Makes it exciting, you know. Because, you know, Krishna can kill anybody. So what, you know, if he just does that, it's no fun. So if you have a little, you know, it's like Prabhupada would use the example, it's like a cat traps a mouse, and then he just plays with it for a while, then he goes home after some time. But, you know, he might beat it around a little bit just to have some fun. So Krishna does that with the demons. You all look so unhappy. Am I saying something wrong? Of course, maybe you're all such great devotees that you don't like to hear about killing. But it says that there are two types of devotees. There are those who like to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis in Vrindavan, and those who like to hear about Krishna killing the demons. And the ones who like to hear about Krishna's pastimes killing in Vrindavan with the gopis are not considered to be always the best in the best consciousness. But those who like to hear about Krishna killing demons, wow! That's far out. That means you're a real deva, because devas, what did devas do? They killed demons, right? So, according to this, all of you are devas. Not so you have to be excited when demons get killed. Right? When the demons get killed, what do the cowherd boys do? Well done! Well done! Thank you, Krishna! You're so great! Well done, well done. So, the demon's just laying all over the place. He's like in 10 parts. Everybody's saying, well done, Hariwa. So that's, Krishna, devotees get excited when demons are killed. So, Krishna kills demons. He likes to. And the demons get benefit from that. He gives them exactly what they deserve and what they need to raise themselves up. So these six enemies, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, envy. Did I miss anger? They are the real enemies. The external enemies are manifestations of these same things in external form, but they cannot harm a devotee in devotional service. So internal enemies are the real threats. Any questions?